Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at RTE.ie. Mary Dunleavy, good afternoon, Mary.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Your opening line is, I am incandescent with fury. Why?
Well, I'm not quite incandescent, but I'm still furious about the way lockdown is being managed and used, particularly with the lack of toilet facilities in the city.
Okay, what happened?
I'm not a young woman. I had to go into Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. It's about 6 kilometres from my home in Lathgar for medical supplies. Okay. Anyway, I needed to use the loo. They have taken advantage in Stephen's Green Shopping Centre, in common with other shopping centres, of closing down the public toilets in there. There are 3 public loos available out on the street. Mm-hmm. On the south side of the city. I went out to use to queue up. The queue was down past Dawson Street.
Wow.
I'm approaching elderly. I'm retired now. My bladder isn't what it used to be, shall we say.
Okay.
There was no way I was going to be able to queue down past Dawson Street without, as I said in my letter, without having an accident that I haven't had since I was about 4 years of age. So I was forced to go up a side road, and my wife had to take off her coat, mm-hmm. put it around me, and I had to go to the toilet on the street. God. I was very humiliated. I still feel that. I'm not ashamed to say it, because this is what we've been reduced to now.
And when you say they've taken advantage, what do you mean, Mary, the shopping centres?
Well, the shopping centre are open, they're doing business, but they don't have to provide a necessary facility. They had it open until a couple of weeks ago, now it's closed. I went down to my local Swan Centre in Rathmines, now they've closed the toilet. So there's people who are being put possibly on furlough for a facility that should, if they're open for business, mm-hmm. they should be providing public toilets.
Now, the public toilets that are at the top of Grafton Street, I haven't seen them because it's outside my 5K, but they are supplied by Dublin City Council, are they not?
By the public, paid for out of the public purse, okay. Unlike, I presume, the ones in the shopping centres, which are paid for by business. So I'm paying for a loo outside the shopping centre, and to say it's inadequate doesn't even begin to cover it.
And did you manage...
Sorry?
Did you manage to get talking to anyone in your... Well, you were panicking at this stage, I presume.
Joe, I wasn't fit to talk. I was so angry and in equal measure humiliated. I just came home. And to be honest with you, I sat down and I said to Yvonne, my partner, I said, do you know, we're being locked down in our own homes at this stage. Mm-hmm. And the government have put absolutely nothing in place. They've just taken... You know, they've allowed business mm-hmm. now to take a very basic facility from the public. Marks and Spencer's in Grafton Street is the same. All the shops have closed down their toilets. There's no COVID reason for that.
Is there not?
No, I don't see.
Okay,
well,
you can't see.
They've had them open until a few weeks ago. Stephen's Green was open the last time I had to go in there. I had to go into Boots. So was Marks and Spencer's. Now they've suddenly decided, oh, we've a great excuse, COVID. And they've closed them down.
And is it illegal, Mary, do you know?
Is what illegal?
To urinate on the street?
I say it probably is, you know, and I don't care.
What would that be, public decency or something?
Probably. But it wouldn't be very nice to see a woman in her 60s standing on the street wetting herself either now, would it?
No.
At least my partner took her coat off and held it in front of me. And I don't like, I mean... Going back to my misspent youth, I may have done that up a lane, but I couldn't even find a lane. You know, I'm sure it is illegal. And what I said was in my letter, I don't support the anti-lockdown people, but I will be one person in there because I think the government are being stupid at this stage. They need to listen. When Middle Ireland kind of people like me are angry, mm-hmm. You know, I'm a very conservative woman.
And is it just over that? Obviously, that's understandable. But is it when you say the government are locking us down, is it just over that? And you're not part of the anti-lockdown cruel.
No,
to
I
say.
Certainly am not. And it's obviously working. And people are putting huge effort, myself included. I wear my mask. I sanitize my hands. I stay out of crowded places as much as possible. I support all of that. But my local church, and it's not my church, actually, it's just Christ Church in the middle of Rathgar Village. The vicar there opened up the grounds and put out some nicely painted, socially distanced seats for people to use.
Okay.
And they were taken away within a matter of a couple of weeks.
By who?
It hasn't stopped people. I don't know, Joe. I only comment on this. But it has stopped the number of people using it. People are now sitting on stone steps and on the ground.
Yeah.
That angers me now increasingly.
So what else about the lockdown? As you say, Mary, you feel, if I'm getting angry, people, Middle Ireland is angry. What else is upsetting you about the lockdown?
Completely off the subject,
yeah,
but on the subject as well. I'm a 64-year-old woman with serious life-limiting health issues. I'm not within an ass's roar of a vaccine, and I'm not looking for it. And yet the children of the master of the Coombe Hospital has got the quote-unquote spare vaccines, and nobody is saying anything about it.
I know, there is an inquiry.
That made me angry.
Well, the fact that we know it helps, for starters.
It does help. That does make me angry. That's the first thing that made me angry. The other thing was, on the day that, this has arisen over a year with me now, not just overnight. That's one thing that makes me angry. Misuse and misappropriation of, and there's another word for it. Well, I won't use the word.
No, I won't.
No, we'll say misappropriation and we leave it at that. And the other thing that that angered me, it was the day that lockdown was extended.
Okay.
I have a son out in Australia and it makes me very sad. I have three grandchildren out there.
Right.
And I had, my partner and I had our tickets booked to see them last May.
Right.
I don't know when I'm going to get out to see them. I can't use Dublin Airport to get out. And yet the very day lockdown was extended, thousands of Brazilians were let in. Now,
they were
with the Brazilian, no doubt. I'm not picking on Brazilian people.
No.
I'm talking about the virus and the. I have lovely Brazilian neighbours, as it happens. I no prejudice against anyone. I think everyone should be kept out of the country. To be honest, if I can't leave the country, why should people be allowed in to extend my lockdown? Do you know what I mean?
But you could argue that about the funeral in Carrick and Shannon on Thursday, the wedding in Salt Hill on Friday. You know, that there's relatively few people holding the whole country hostage because the numbers go up and there are hot spots in the country.
And there are
big swathes of the country where there's no cases.
Do we need to be inviting virulent strains into the country that we don't? And look, I accept and I welcome people from the EU. We have an agreement with them. They're EU members and we have mutual obligations.
Okay.
Do we have some meat deal with Brazil that allows students basically a green card?
Well, apparently a lot of them are Irish and they're working here and we're returning home from relatives in Brazil. But anyway, what about, are you following the vaccine scenario? As you say, you have life-limiting...
I have life-limiting.
When will you get the vaccine? You're 64, which is young, but...
Yeah, I have no idea, and I'm not looking for it. And unlike the master's children, I'm not going to be jumping any queue. I'm not going to be jumping any queue. Not that I'm not important enough, and I don't know enough people to do it, but I wouldn't be doing it anyway. But I don't know. Look how slow it is going in Ireland. They're bragging, I think it was last week, they got 30,000 extra. How many people are in Ireland now? 5 million? I don't know when I'm ever going to get out to see my son in Australia.
And what do you think about the AstraZeneca scenario where the government are saying they're being extra cautious? WHO say it's fine, 17 million doses. And the government are saying, well, we're being extra cautious, but everything should be okay by the end of the week. But it's the same vaccine.
Yeah.
So why are they...
I don't know is the answer. Yeah. I don't know a lot. But I really would like to know what the government... It seems the government can bring in legislation, lickety-splits. And one of the things that... Oh, my God, it's over a year ago. Up in the village here, in Rathgar Village, I saw a big white Black Mariah. I know that's...
yeah, I know what you mean. A van.
A big Garda van with social control on the front of it. And I thought, jeepers, we've entered 1984, George Orwell's nightmare. And we've seen more of that since then. If they put as much energy into looking after the mental, psychological welfare of people as they are about the physical.
And what are you hearing from your friends, Mary, insofar as you can, you can't meet them, but insofar as you can talk to them and your family, what is the general feeling about the lockdown at this stage?
Well, the general feeling, my Irish grandson just went back to school on Monday and he's thrilled. He's absolutely thrilled. And I wouldn't like to, I tell you, none of us would like to do anything to put children going back to school in jeopardy because their social skills are what's going to be lost out on. My poor little grandson, Jack, was desperate to get back to school and he's gone back.
Super.
And he's, so I don't want to, okay, I'm not going to do anything to jeopardise that.
Okay. You're thinking,
and that's the general feeling.
You're thinking
but
of the greater good.
There's advantage being taken. Like my son was in a queue in Lidl. Now this is a story. Now this is a growing feeling I'm getting from people.
Okay.
And the girl said, he heard the girl say, "I'm going on my break now in a minute." No harm to that. So he said, "You use the other queue." And a sign went up: COVID cleaning. She was going on a tea break, nothing to do with COVID.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
But they're hard
everything
workers.
Nowadays,
they are hard.
Oh,
workers.
They are very hard, and they're lovely.
Yeah, they are lovely.
They couldn't be nicer. But one thing I do notice is that Dunn Stores would appear to control the Swan Centre and Stephen's Green, and they're the two centres that I know I've used. Maybe other people can tell you, in the last few weeks, have shut down their toilets.
Okay, we'll try and find out more. We'll try and find out.
Yeah.
Okay, Mary, stay safe. Thanks indeed.
You too.
That's Mary Dunleavy in Dublin. Mary is in Limerick. You begin by saying, "I'm pro-vaccine," but what has happened, Mary? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What's happened?
Okay, first and foremost, there's one thing I'd like to say, and that is that I'm not COVID, or I'm not vaccine resistant, or I'm not a disprover of vaccines, but I would just like to outline the case of a relative of mine who had a baseline of health and fitness, who received a vaccine on the 28th of February and had quite a severe and adverse reaction to the vaccine. Mm-hmm. It required hospitalisation and her care was absolutely excellent. She was very well cared for.
Was it the AstraZeneca?
She was reassured that it was noted. Mm. And post discharge from hospital.
Okay, you're gone on me there, unfortunately. Post, are you back there, Mary? It sounds like it might come back. Can you hear me? No, I'll take a quick break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, we will try and get that phone line back in because we think the battery is actually gone. But she was making the point that her daughter is a frontline health worker in her 20s, got the AstraZeneca vaccination in Ireland, obviously in the Republic, a few days ago and had a difficult reaction, was taken to hospital but has now been released. Now, are you back there, Marie? You are.
Yes, we're back. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm not sure where we were cut
off.
Okay,
no, I was just paraphrasing. Your daughter, mid-20s, got the vaccination. What reaction did you have to the AstraZeneca?
So it was a cardiac arrhythmia.
That's to do with the heartbeat, obviously. And was there blood clots mentioned?
No, there wasn't. The issue that I just want to highlight is that it has been reported to the Health Products Regulatory Authority.
Okay,
that has been done. There has been no response from them, and that was done on the 3rd of March. The other point we wanted to make, that on the gov.uk website, that it is listed each reaction of an adverse nature to the AstraZeneca vaccine is visual.
Okay.
And it is documented on there that there is a side effect of arrhythmia and palpitations.
Okay.
However, the point I want to make mm-hmm. is that if people have any cardiac history, which some young people do, they might have tachycardias, that they need to be aware of this adverse reaction and to act on it promptly, because a cardiac arrhythmia that isn't corrected will result in clotting effects. All right?
But the WHO say, as of today, AstraZeneca is safe. I see the chief medical officer in Northern Ireland, he actually got the AstraZeneca jab this morning, and he's in his late 50s, early 60s.
I know, but what is happening at the moment is making people suspicious. Yeah. If you have suspicion about anything, you are not going, you know, if you have suspicion of an adverse event, you're not going to take a vaccine. You know, this is what turns people away
That's
from
a good
vaccines.
Point. Well, do you
if
think?
You are open yeah. and informed, yeah. You know, if you have informed consent, you are aware of the side effects. And I believe people should be aware of this. Okay. People should be aware if they have prolonged palpitations. This is an arrhythmia. It needs to be corrected. If it's corrected, it won't cause clots. Do you understand?
Yeah, and it was it corrected in your daughter's case?
Yes, it was. And it was corrected very, very well.
Okay.
And she received
right.
excellent care.
And how is she now?
She is recovering and she's, you know, being supervised by a cardiologist. But the issue isn't about her care, which has been excellent. The issue we want to highlight, there needs to be open transparency about what the adverse effect of the AstraZeneca vaccine is. Yes, it does cause palpitations.
In some, in rare cases, by all accounts.
In rare cases.
Well 17 million cases, 17 million injections in the UK alone.
It does cause palpitations, but they can be self-limiting. But in some cases, they are prolonged, as in my daughter's case, and had to be corrected medically. If it wasn't corrected medically, it could have led to clot formation.
And who's telling you that, Marie?
My daughter is a healthcare provider, and I'm a healthcare provider, and I have a baseline of knowledge, you know.
Okay. Would you take the AstraZeneca vaccine?
I have taken the Pfizer vaccine.
Okay.
And I did not. I'm not a vaccine.
You're not anti-vax.
I most certainly am not. Most certainly
okay,
am
well
not.
Done. Okay.
But if people, you know, there is a lot of.
Well, I haven't
chatter.
Seen. Yeah, I haven't seen the forms because the vaccine situation here is not many people overall have been vaccinated. I think at this stage,
but
the Minister for Health has done more interviews than the vaccines have been given out. But he is saying, which again is, he's saying that the vaccination suspension will be very short. So why, if he knows it will be very short, why is that not crying wolf and making people worried?
But Joe, every single day another country is suspending it, you know, which isn't good for the overall, you know, vaccination program. Mm-hmm. But I believe if people
today the world
information, give information, explain
transparency. Okay,
yes, it is a severe vaccine. There are some reactions, and everybody's individual reaction is different. My daughter had an adverse reaction, but make people aware, you know, that yes, it is a possible side effect.
Okay.
But it can be corrected.
Great, which happened in your case. The UK are still using AstraZeneca. Lots of countries are still using it. And I heard Professor Luke O'Neill. Now, do you rate him as an expert? A lot of people do. Professor of Biotechnology in Trinity. He was on this morning and he was adamant that the government were wrong suspending the AstraZeneca role. Absolutely adamant. He said they were defying science by banning it. And it does create, these are my words, it does create that cry wolf. People say, hang on, there must be something suspicious. And some people are, not you. Some people are waiting to jump on that.
He also, Luke
O'Neill also said that that the in from what he could find out so far, that people get blood clots. It's a fairly common, unfortunately, occurrence in people, blood clots. Mm-hmm. And he said people do get them. And one of the figures he was looking at over the weekend showed that there was less people getting blood clots, but they were relating it. Some countries were saying might be something to do with the AstraZeneca, but he was totally and completely against suspending it. He said we still have an awful lot of vulnerable people in this country that are not near a vaccine, unfortunately, and they need to be looked at. Stay with us, Marie, please.
I believe in knowledge.
Yeah, hear.
People have knowledge and education, not be suspicious.
And there needs
to be openness and transparency on this.
Okay.
That is my point.
And do I then go back to your point earlier where you say you can look up the gov.uk website,
yes,
and they will tell you if there's any...
And there can be a discussion about that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what
you
say.
But not on the health products regulatory. You know, there is nothing
the one here
on the HSE.
Okay. Stay with us. Dermot MacDonald. Dermot, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
You think, as lots of experts point out, every vaccine is a balance of risks. Now, the problem is COVID is such a horrible, horrible illness. Would you take AstraZeneca?
Joe, I'd take it this afternoon. I thought Marie made a great point. You know, it's important that all these things, everybody's going to react differently. Joe, I've had at least a dozen vaccines in my life to date, mm-hmm, sometimes three at a time. As you said, balance of risk. I've listened to the medical experts. Some people will have an adverse reaction, like Marie's unfortunate daughter, and I wish her a speedy recovery. But, you know, I'm around vulnerable people. I personally know people who have died of COVID even recently. And I'm concerned of, you know, what are we going to do with the stocks of AstraZeneca we have? Are we going to dump them? Are we going to put them in people's arms? So for me, it's my choice, my risk. I'll take it this afternoon. If there's a doctor in Castlebar who's got stuff that's going to expire, give me a call. That's my view, Joe. We're lagging behind in vaccinations, and we need to get the vaccine into people's arms. So if it's there, I'll take it. I don't care what brand it is.
And what do you think of the government and the HSE position is, which is that, it's just going to be a short pause. In other words, they fully expect it to be okay, but if they fully expect it to be okay...
It's just another excuse for the government. We're falling behind everybody in terms of getting it done. You know, it's just another excuse for poor numbers. You know, you made the point, the health minister has probably given more interviews then people have been vaccinated. That's not quite true.
No, it's a throwaway.
Your point is right there, Joe. And, you know, for the willing, and there are many of us, let's keep the show on the road. That's my point.
And you feel you know enough about all the... Well, you trust the people who have...
I might have heart arrhythmia. I might have a blood clot. I realise that. Okay? That's fine. I'll take the risk.
Okay. Marie, have you spoken... Marie, have you spoken to your daughter about the actual vaccination procedure, and is she happy that she got it?
It is just we've gone through this adverse experience. It has not been nice, but we just feel that there is, you know, with all these shutdowns in different countries with the vaccination programs, there is suspicion now, you know, and like people are not, there isn't going to be an uptake if people are suspicious and don't have confidence in a vaccine program. I believe there needs to be more education out there. People are just using the word clots, but, you know, there are reactions to this vaccine and people need to be made aware of it and get the treatment promptly. And this will stop a bad outcome.
And Dermot,
do you understand?
Also, I'm listening to Dermot's point is that
an adverse reaction is a rarity, but it is a possibility.
Okay. And some people get get a strong reaction because it's the vaccine working. It's the vaccine getting into their immune system.
It is your body's reaction to the vaccine. But, you know, in my daughter's case, you know, we interceded, we got help. It was dealt with very effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
But some people might say, well, just take two paracetamol and go to bed, you know, which is not the right thing to do, you know, with a prolonged reaction. Knowledge is king, I feel.
And where was your daughter? Where was your daughter when she got this reaction, Marie?
She came home post she was at home. Okay. She was at home.
And were you there? Who was with her? Or?
Yes. Yeah.
And what did you what did you notice?
She complained of palpitations,
okay,
which proceeded to chest pain and shortness of breath.
And did you ring an ambulance or did you?
No, I took her
okay
to hospital and it was dealt with. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Her
well
care,
done.
I could not fault her care, nothing like that. And, you know, as I said,
okay, and at this stage, at this, I know there's a timing link. But has it been linked with the vaccination, the palpitations?
Yes, it has, yes.
Okay, okay.
Okay.
But let me put it to you.
It's her body's reaction to
okay,
it.
Okay.
And everybody's reaction is individual. It is just that it was just her reaction to it because it is a live vaccine, you know. So it's just her reaction. And as I said, I feel people need this knowledge and it needs to be available on, you know, it needs to be there, you know.
Because you're saying it is there on websites
and
government websites.
You know, it's part of any treatment to give informed consent. And if people are made aware of this possible side effect, then, you know, they'll have the knowledge and it could be dealt with promptly and not have an adverse outcome.
Especially
my daughter did not have an adverse outcome because we dealt with it.
Yeah.
Okay, but arrhythmias lead to clots. That's just the point I want to make, Joe.
Okay. And if she was aware, insofar as you can answer this, Marie, if she was aware that there was a possibility that she would get palpitations, would she still go ahead with the vaccine if she was offered it this week for the first time?
She was always pro-vaccine.
Yeah, okay.
And she would possibly, yes, she would.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Yeah. Which is
if she had the reaction, you know, I'm a healthcare provider. My daughter's a healthcare. We knew what to do. We knew how to get the help, and we knew what was needed.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, great.
I think ordinary Joe, would take two paracetamol and go to bed possibly, and not have dealt with it as promptly. You know.
And were there a number of the experts yesterday were saying, if there's a change in was it if there's spots emerging or blue spots, I think were mentioned.
Yeah.
So that's been mentioned at this stage. That anyway, you're saying I take a point. I didn't from it, but your daughter, you believe, would still go for the AstraZeneca.
She would still go for vaccine.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I'm not saying she'd go for the AstraZeneca because she had an adverse reaction, but she would. You know, we are all pro-vaccine. We understand.
Yeah. Okay.
You know
okay
how vital it is. We work in healthcare. It is vital, but I don't like what's coming into the vaccination program, which is suspicion, because countries now are suspending their vaccination programs with the AstraZeneca. You know, this is fostering suspicion.
Yeah, but there was right from the get-go, like, and there was a bit of Brexit and jingoism in this. Emmanuel Macron, the French president, he said, oh, we're not going to give AstraZeneca to over 65s. And now it's emerged that it's perfectly safe for over 65s.
Yeah.
And they are going to administer it. But the problem now in France is, well, they're sceptical anyway, the best of times. But the problem in France now is that a significant percentage of the population don't trust the vaccines.
Yeah. There's only a 45%
uptake. So is there a danger? Is there a danger in crying wolf? That's my point. The government have cried that they're going to pause. There's this contradiction almost in what they're saying. They're going to pause the AstraZeneca vaccine and they hope it'll be back. The same vaccine will be available on Thursday or Friday. So what was the point in striking fear into people's hearts?
Well, I hope they're looking, you know, we have given the feedback, as I said, to the Health Products Regulatory Authority on what happened within our family. You know, We haven't received any communication from them. We did that on the 3rd of March. Her reaction was on the 28th. You know, there's a full 2 weeks.
That's a good point,
I would, I hope there.
Has your daughter ever had any side effects of, because you read on medicine to be careful?
No, she hasn't. No,
No. Well done, Marie, and well done for putting it in the context that you put it in. And well done on your work and your daughter's work as well, most importantly. And stay well. Okay. Dermot, you're still adamant.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you,
I'm
Marie.
Go.
Yep, thank you. Good morning. That's Marie in Limerick. Dermot, well, what do you think of that scenario where the government are saying, well, everyone is saying, oh, it'll only be for a few days, the pause?
You know, I'm worried about the stocks we had, as everybody knows.
But I think they will last. Don't they last longer than the Pfizer?
I quite honestly, Joe, there's so many of them coming out now. I don't know which one or the other. But, you know, if the stocks are there, we've got people sitting around who've been administering this vaccine now doing nothing. I presume we don't have replacement stocks.
No, we don't. So we're
going to miss a few days. People will die as a result of that. That's my point. You know, I think Marie made a terrific contribution, Joe, may I say. Absolutely terrific, given her daughter's reaction and so on and so forth. And her point about informing people, you know, is crucial. Right. But, you know, the risk, on the other hand, to the older people in our community, people I'm around regularly, you know, for me, I'm not comfortable putting them at risk.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll take the risk of whatever side effects. I've been fortunate so far, Joe, as I said, I've had at least a dozen, and I've not had anything at all as serious as palpitations, for example.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we need to keep the show on the road. We're lagging behind everybody else. Joe Biden is saying that they'll have enough in May for everybody in the United States.
Incredible, yeah. Incredible.
You know, and we're looking at what, Joe? October?
We're looking at it. We're looking at over 1,000 people dead last 8 weeks ago in January alone.
And how many are going to die between now and we get the job done?
Okay. Okay, Dermot, stay safe. You haven't any idea when you're going to get the vaccine, have you, Dermot?
Not at all, Joe, no more than anybody of my age. But I'm just saying, if there's stocks out, it just horrified me when the ban came in. You know, you made the point about the Trinity man on earlier, and I listened to the dean of Harvard, of the Baylor Medical School in Texas, and he said he'd take it tomorrow. So,
the chief medical officer in Northern Ireland took it this morning.
Well, there you go. You know, that's the point. Right, these people who are knowledgeable people who are well qualified.
But the problem is, Dermot, it is going to feed into people who are saying, oh, hang on a minute, there's something dodgy here. The government suspended it.
We've always had that, Joe. We've always had, people aren't going to change.
Okay.
There's always been the anti-vaxxers or anti-this and the other. You know, for the rest of us, can we emulate what the Americans or our neighbours across in the UK are doing? And get to 30% in some kind of reasonable time.
Okay.
You know, we're looking at October, Joe. The whole year is gone. We're back into winter before the economy opens up.
Well, I don't know whether you saw the piece in the Sunday World yesterday where, I won't give his name, but this is a former editor of the Sunday World. He worked in England at one stage and he found an old NHS number. He lives here in the Republic, as they say. He found an NHS number, banged it into the computer, and he was offered, and he took it, a vaccination up north within a couple of days.
Brilliant.
And they're vaccinating. Well, maybe people who have worked in England might be able to avail of that. And they're now vaccinating the over 50s today, and we haven't vaccinated all the over 80s.
I know. That's my point. Like, you know, people in the business sector are being crushed in lots of sectors, hospitality and so on and so forth. So, you know, we need to get the job done and get open our economy and make people feel safe. Yeah. More important, protect people.
Yeah. Okay, Dermot, go to Mina Market. That's Dermot MacDonald in the west of Ireland. 51551, Marchant.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Mary was making the point at the start of the programme that she believes some businesses are taking advantage of the lockdown. For example, shopping centres are all shutting their toilets, even though their stores are open. And Keane Bourne is on the line, and Alice Walsh, both of them running independent bookshops. Keane, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe, how are you doing?
Good. You were out walking yesterday in Maynooth. What happened?
Yeah, I was walking around the town, Joe. I was actually out with my family. We were looking to get T-shirts for a three-year-old, which is another story for another day. But while I was out, I was into the local shopping centre, and there was a chain bookstore was wide open selling books. Now, and then we couldn't find what we were looking for, so we headed up to Tesco. And again, the same thing, book aisle is wide open. And it being Saturday, Mother's Day on Sunday, they were absolutely mobbed, you know.
Why can the Maynooth bookshop, which you run, why cannot you and own your family, why can you not open?
Well, books are deemed non-essential. Back in October, when Level 5 was last enacted, Retail Excellence Ireland got clarification from the Department of Trade, and they got clarification, you know, what is essential, what's non-essential. And right at the top of that list were books.
As non-essential.
And yeah. So we're closed. And in this lockdown, unlike the other ones, we're also not able to do click and collect. So it has been challenging on that front.
How are your online sales?
They're okay. They've definitely gone down. It's been challenging since after Christmas. So I think before Christmas there was a lot of the message was out there to shop local, to support Irish retailers, to your local Irish retailers.
Well, I see in your tweet here originally, no exaggeration, we had one online sale yesterday.
Yeah, that was on Friday, Joe. Yeah, it was one online and. Look, it was, I suppose, coming off the back of that, and then I see others are taking advantage of a situation, as far as I'm concerned, is hard to take. I have no problem being closed. Well, I mean, I've no problem that we're following the rules. There's a reason that we've been asked to do this, and we'll do it. What I have a problem with is, you know, in the first lockdown, it was very much a feeling of we're all in this together. And everyone was pulling in the same direction. It feels like, and I mean, I just talk about my own industry with booksellers. It feels now that some of us are still in it together, and some have decided, you know what, we're going to take advantage of this. We see that there's no enforcement. So therefore, why would we jump in
but there was enforcement a couple of weeks ago up in Balbriggan when the beauticians opened and the Gardaí arrived, and it's no longer open.
Absolutely, Joe, but with all respect, the reason that was because of shows like yours. And you know, it only happens when people jump up and down and make a scene. And, I mean, well, here I am now jumping up and down and making a scene. But
So are you just to be clear, Keane, you're objecting to, well, tell me, Eason's being open or to Tesco selling books or both?
I'm not actually objecting to it, Joe. What I'm objecting to is that they're, I mean, well, the rules are there and they're not adhering to them. And the problem is the more people that don't adhere to the rules like this, the longer we're going to be in these lockdowns. You know, there's nothing more I want than to have the door open and selling books. Yeah. There's nothing more I want than have customers in the shop. But we've been asked to do this, and that's what we're doing.
OK, Alice Walsh, Joe at RT.ie. Alice Walsh is in the Village Bookshop here in Terenure in Dublin. Alice, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're closed, but do you sell cards, as a lot of bookshops do? Do you sell cards?
We sell cards, Joe, and we also sell newspapers.
Okay.
Not a huge amount, but we sell the Irish Times, the Indo, and we would provincial papers.
Do you sell Mother's Day cards?
Oh, Joe, don't talk about Mother's Day cards. I sold between 12 and 15 last week, and in previous years I would have been 10 times that amount.
Oh, God.
And you see, for every Mother's Day card you sell, you'd probably also sell a book for that mother. Yeah. So it's just been disastrous.
And is the week which has just passed leading up to Mother's Day, is it a big week for bookshops?
Mother's Day, yeah. You have Christmas, which is obviously great.
Yeah.
Then you have Valentine's Day, which is good.
Okay.
And then you have Mother's Day is the next big thing, John.
Okay.
And then just to, as Keane there was saying, you know, to walk into a supermarket and see them selling all those books that that we could have been selling, or to walk into Easton's and see the same thing. It's just, it's very frustrating, Joe.
And would Easton's argue that we sell lots more than books, which you do, stationery, newspapers,
oh, yes,
and magazines?
Course, yeah, they would argue, games. And they're right. I mean, I don't want Easton's to close. I want everyone to open, but okay. Everyone to open at the same time and everyone to work together.
And Tesco would sell a limited selection of books, wouldn't they?
Well, they'd sell a limited selection, but they'd sell them the very popular ones. I mean, for instance, before Christmas, I approached the manager in the local Lidl supermarket because they had loads of books. And we, at that stage, I'm all mixed up at the time, so we could only do the click and collect. And I was saying to him, and how come you're selling all these books and we can't? And he said, well, sure, look, this kind of stuff is less than 1% of our turnover. And he just didn't get it. I was saying, but it's 100% of mine.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
You know, there's no, you get weary trying to, you know, just yep. trying to.
And as Cian, yes.
No, just if I could just say, I mean, the thing about Easton's being open, one of my shops, I have a shop in the university in Maynooth and I have a shop in the university in UCD. Okay. And we're open for stationery sales there because we're allowed to open for stationery sales. And okay. we could open the Maynooth bookshop for the same reason. But the government instructions are very clear on gov.ie that non-essential retail should be segregated. And that's why I decided not to open the Maynooth bookshop, because it would be too hard to say no to my regular customers. I can't give you that book over there.
Okay.
The guidelines are very clear on this. And there's a reason that Tesco have the children's toys section closed, is because before Christmas there was uproar that they were going to get massive sales that Irish sellers weren't going to get, etc. Yeah. And it's just what it seems is that Tesco will apply the rules if there's uproar about it, because the books are on the same list as the children's toys, and it's on the same list as gardening products. But, you know, if you walk through your Tesco, you'll see different areas. Nobody cares about them. So, there's not been a big uproar about it. So they'll leave them open. So they'll apply the rules when when they get negative feedback. But otherwise, it's kind of, actually, we're getting away with it. Let's see what we can do here.
And Cian, would click and collect the reintroduction on? Would that help you?
Massively, yeah.
Oh, massively, okay.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times on the phone, Joe, we're told that Easton's are open down the road from us. And it's nothing against the people who are working in Easton's, because it's obviously coming from above. But, you know, we're asked, oh, but sure, Easton's are open. Oh, sure, I'm only coming over from wherever it might be. Oh, I'll try Easton's because they're open. You know, I mean, it's constant that we're getting that said to us on the phone.
Okay.
Okay. We're the same, Joe.
Okay,
same.
Alice Walsh. Yeah. And you would welcome click and collect, Alice, as a
Oh, no, it would just change our lives at the moment.
Okay.
You know, it's just so difficult.
Okay, Alice Walsh.
Like that, people think, sure, I can use my travel pass to go into Easton's to get the book, you know?
Okay, Alice Curran, that's Alice Walsh, the Village Bookshop in Keenborn and Maynooth Books, both making the same point. Professor Sam McConkey, Head of International Health and Tropical Medicine, the RCSI. Sam, good afternoon. Now, I don't know if you heard the earlier debate between one of our listeners' daughter got palpitations after the AstraZeneca, and she's a frontline worker. She was hospitalised for 2 days, but she's fine now, and her mother did say that she would take the vaccine again, but there needs to be clearer. She feels there needs to be clearer warnings about possible side effects.
So thanks, Ramjo. I would say that every vaccine and every health intervention, you know, even, you know, using the car has some risk associated with it. People certainly get a sore arm, and some people get fever. Some people feel tired after vaccine. And that's fairly normal and acceptable for a day or two, as long as they don't persist. I think the reason why this story has grown a bit is that apparently 4 people in Norway had some sort of clots out of maybe 200,000 people or so. Now, are those clots all the same? We don't know. At present, the European Medicines Agency, which is the regulator in the European Union, is doing a review of that. And I think out of caution, our own National Immunisation Advisory Council in Ireland has said, let's just hold the vaccine for 4 or 5 days until the results of that review are available to us, hopefully on Thursday or Friday. So it's still a licensed product. It's still legal to prescribe it and dispense it and give it in Ireland. But our advisory group, which has been cautious, have said, let's just wait 4 days until this.
And what will they know? What will they know, Sam, insofar as what will they know on Thursday that they don't know today?
So several things. So they'll be looking for the Norwegian authorities to give a detailed dossier of each of the four cases of clots to see, is it a consistent, first of all, is there really clots at all there? How serious were they? Are they the same type of clots? Because there's very different clots in the body. Some are in the arteries, some are in the veins, and they're kind of completely different. Some are in the leg, some are in the lung. The lung ones, as you know, are more serious. Probably the worst place to get a clot is in your brain, in the artery, and then you get a stroke or a TIA, and you know that's a bad thing. And then they'll be asking, is the rate of clots higher in people who've had the AstraZeneca vaccine than in the average population? So many of the Scandinavian countries have very good computerized databases for hospital care and for GP care for everyone in the population, and they'll be able to look at it in the 2 weeks after vaccine, was there a higher rate of adverse events and clots in particular in the people who've recently been vaccinated rather than a control population. AstraZeneca, also the manufacturers, have data on 17 million people who've been given the vaccine, and they can obviously provide that to the EMA to make an independent review. Compare that to the rate of clots in the general population. Unfortunately, clots are a common thing. Just been lying in the bed for 2 weeks, you have a risk of clots. Any infection, you have a risk of increased clots. So they're unfortunately a common thing in the world of healthcare, you know, and they're something that just can happen by chance. It may not be a causal relationship. So what the EMA will determine from all this data is, one, is there a higher rate of clotting in folk after the vaccine in the first week or two than before the vaccine? And then secondly, how big is that rate? Because if it's only 1 in 1 million, Joe, it really doesn't matter. We know that the death rate from COVID is about 1 in 200 of people who get it. That's a lot. That's a high risk. Yeah. If you get COVID, you know, some people are fine, but about 1 in 200 have a case fatality rate. So you've got to balance the benefits of a protective vaccine from COVID against a risk of 1 in 1 million. I'd be happy with that risk of clot, especially if it was a non-life-threatening clot. So they hopefully will quantify that for us, give the data to the Irish government and NIAC, and then hopefully we can restart on Thursday and Friday.
But is there a danger, which it was alluded to earlier, is there a danger that this questioning of AstraZeneca will back up the anti-vaxxers, who'll say, oh, hang on a minute, there's no smoke, you know, all the cliches they fall back on, there's no smoke without fire, and even the government stopped the AstraZeneca for a week, so there must be something. Even they were worried.
Yeah, I would turn around the other way and say that this shows that there are national systems in Ireland that are very, very cautious. And when there's even a whiff of some possible problem in Norway or in Austria, we want to pause for a few days, get the full data, and then make a decision based on all the data. That's a sign of a cautious, well-run, prudent program, not some erratic program that's not based on evidence. So I think it's reassuring to people that we do have a government decision-making system that's cautious and that wants to see all the facts of the case before they go ahead. So I would say the opposite. Okay.
Even though the chief medical officer, you might know him, Michael McBride, he got the AstraZeneca in Northern Ireland. He took the AstraZeneca this morning, got the injection. It was televised.
Yeah.
The World Health Organization said there's no issue. Professor Luke O'Neill from Trinity, he's adamant they shouldn't have stopped it, that the science doesn't support a stop at this stage.
Yeah, well, if you want to get personal, I also had it about several weeks ago as well. And I'm not at all worried about clots. Clots are multifactorial. It's about lying in the bed, doing exercise, getting on those TED stockings, pumping your feet like you do on the airplane, like the long haul flight. But if the rate of clots was something similar to, say, a flight to Australia, you know, we all like to fly to Australia. If we had the opportunity, Joe, we'd all be trying it. So if it was something like the same sort of risk as the risk of a clot and going to Australia on an airplane, most of us would probably comfortably take it. And it might not be any risk at all. So this is just a prudent effort to wait for the quantification of the evidence before we go ahead. So I agree it probably turned out to be not significant, but we're just a prudent, cautious, let's watch and wait. It's a bit like being up a mountain and you're sort of wanting to look at your map. Would you be a guy that'd be driving, Joe, you'd stop your car and pull in and look at the map? Or would you just keep driving as you sort of look on the map on the passenger seat? We've kind of stopped driving to look at the map and see where we're going and then still get to our destination. So I'm hoping we will really use vaccines to control COVID-19 very well in Ireland, the Pfizer one and the AstraZeneca one. Hopefully
the only thing is, Sam, if I was in my car and I was being chased by something such as COVID, I'd be very keen. I'm very keen to get vaccinated. I'm sure a lot of people are.
Yeah, well, that's true. So this is a pause. It's still a licensed product now. This is a pause rather than a stop.
Okay. And Marie, and you say the pause is to drill down into the facts and figures. That's been okay. Now, Marie used the phrase "it's a live vaccine." Now, I didn't drill into that when. But there's no COVID in it. We know that.
No, there's no COVID in it. It's based on a vector of an adenovirus. That's a common cold virus from chimpanzees. And there's a couple of bits removed from it, so it doesn't replicate. So it does make protein, and that's the whole idea. It gets into cells. It causes protein of the spike protein of coronavirus to be made on our cells, and then our body reacts to that and creates the antibodies that protect us. So it does get into cells. It is an active virus, but it doesn't replicate. It can't produce sort of a second and third and fifth generation because it's been attenuated, is the technical word. It means it's been sort of some of the replication genes have been deleted, so it doesn't really replicate. It's not like TB vaccine or yellow fever vaccines are very much live. It's an attenuated recombinant vaccine that's been attenuated, so it's weakened. It's a weakened strain that doesn't really produce granddaughters, if you like.
Okay. And did you have any reaction when you got the?
I actually had a mild headache and a bit of a backache. I just felt mildly slightly tired for probably about 3 or 4 hours. I'm not a medicine man. I didn't take any paracetamol. I did nothing. I just sort of toughened it out. And then by the next morning, I woke up. I was fine. But I did feel.
And have you had your second jab, Sam? Can I ask?
Not yet. It's coming hopefully soon. I'm waiting for that.
Now, the Associated Press are reporting in the last few minutes, Sam, that Germany has become the latest country to suspend the use of the AstraZeneca vaccine. I presume they're playing to the same tune as well. We wait till the EMA.
Exactly. So there's now lots of countries: Norway, Iceland, Denmark, Netherlands, ourselves, and I think Hungary, Bulgaria, Germany. So there's lots of countries. So everyone's just doing the same thing, you know, in Indonesia. So it's just a caution till we see this review. And then if the review shows that the clots are either not serious or they're very low levels or they're not related, then we start up again. And if it shows a very high rate of clots, obviously then we have to rethink it. But I'm hoping that won't be the case. And certainly from 4 cases in Netherlands or in Norway, that's quite a small number of cases. And I think 3 of them weren't too serious.
Okay. Professor Sam McConkie, as always, thanks indeed. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
I don't know. From Eileen on Friday and the cattle truck driver and the cattle dealer and the dealer who drove her to the driver, and she was absolutely head over heels with the driver and he was head over heels with Eileen. They were both 25. She just back from the States. And the dealer then told Eileen and their family that the driver had been killed driving the truck, or his driver, his employee. Eileen was heartbroken and went on with her life, was going to go back to the States, but then she met someone and he said, "Don't go back, marry me." And she said, "Absolutely." And they were driving 2 days before the wedding in around Killarney, and around the corner comes the truck and the dead driver, so to speak, is driving. As she said, she jumped out of the car, said, "You're back from the dead, you're resurrected. I was told you were deceased." And he said, "Who told you that?" And she explained. And at this stage, I'm seeing Saoirse Ronan and Paul Mescal now in these two roles, and Michael Fassbender as the dealer. But anyway, the driver said, "Well, you're getting married in 2 days. It should be me." And Eileen said, "Well, everything is planned for the wedding." And as their most poignant phrase in the whole 75 minutes when she captured the hearts of the nation on Friday was, "I would have gladly walked up the aisle with the two of them. I was torn between two lovers." Now, by the way, we've had quite a few suggestions, and obviously we can't be throwing out names of either the dealer, the driver who drove her to Eileen away, but the dealer drove Eileen away from the driver. But we are following inquiries and we're going through. Obviously, there's GDPR and things like that, but we're going through a number of suggestions and we'll keep you, hopefully we'll have it sorted by St. Patrick's Day. We're on tomorrow. Elizabeth Robertson. Elizabeth, good afternoon. You were listening to Eileen, her story about long-distance love. You have a story about long-distance love.
Hey, Joe. I do indeed.
Tell us.
It was 1981.
Okay.
I was on holiday with my friends over in Ibiza, the Holiday Island, as it was called then.
Yeah.
We were on the quiet side of the island, so we used to go into San Antonio just for the pubs and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And this night we were outside an Irish pub called Joe Spoon's, which is still there, and these Scottish boys came over and started talking to us.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, this guy was talking to my friend, and she said, "Oh, I can't understand a word he's saying.
Okay.
Will you talk to him?"
Right.
So she said, I said, "Okay." So I started talking to this fella anyway, and he was really nice. And I think he was the first boy that ever bought us a drink. So she liked him then. So we had a drink with him, and we were all going off dancing, and mm-hmm. everywhere was open till all hours in the morning, as you can imagine. So anyway, he said to me, "Will you come back and meet me tonight?" And I said, "Yeah, no problem."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "We'll go back and I'll come back in tonight." So we exchanged our addresses, our home addresses. And
well, your home was in Ireland, did I say?
Yeah, I lived in Dublin.
Oh,
Okay. So anyway, it was Diane and Charles's wedding.
Oh, in 1981, okay. Yeah,
so there was parties all over the beach, but we didn't know who they were, but we still partied with them anyway.
Course,
so
yeah.
Went back, and I ended up getting sunstroke, too much sun and too much champagne. So
yeah.
I needn't tell you, I never got back that night to see him.
Uh-huh.
And then,
what was his name? Alec?
Alec, yeah.
Alec, okay.
Yeah, so I was going home a couple of days later, but he was just beginning his holiday. So I went home, and when my dad seen me at the airport, he says, "Where were you?" I was so skinny, I never ate.
Okay.
And I had all these blisters.
And what was Alex's second name?
It's Robertson.
So if there's an Alex Robertson listening, we want him to get in touch, is that it?
No, I'm married to him.
Oh, you're I was wondering where the accent was coming from.
Yeah, no, I'm married to him. What happened was I never got back to meet him that night. So when I went home, I went back to work, and I came home from work one night, and my dad said to me, "Who do you know in Ibiza?" And I said, "I don't know anybody in Ibiza." Yeah. He says, "Well, there's a card there for you." So I was like, "A card for me?" And then I read it, and it was from Alec, and he wrote, to cut a long story short, "I lost my mind." So I knew it was from him, because at that time we were all into Spandau Ballet, and so he had put his phone number on the card.
And what do you mean between, what do you mean, Elizabeth, sorry, between you and me, "I lost my mind"? What excitement, was it?
No, it was a song. It was a line from a song. From Spandau Ballet at the time.
Okay, so
to cut a long story short, I lost my mind.
Okay. So this was written on the postcard?
That was written on the postcard,
and you can remember 40 years later what was written on that postcard?
Yeah, I can remember every single bit of that night, Joe, and here we are, we're 35 years married now in April.
Okay, go back, spool back.
Right.
So you get the postcard from Alex. He mentions the song. You can remember the words. And how did he finished with his phone number?
Finished with his phone number. So I went into work the next day, and I was telling all the girls. I worked in Marks and Spencer's in Dublin.
Okay.
And I was telling all the girls all the story, and they were like, "Oh my God!" And you need to phone him. So we hadn't got a telephone in our house, so I used to go to the GPO every Thursday night with £5 and 10 pences and phone them.
Remember, there used to be the phone booths in the GPO?
Right, because when
the
I go home,
ones,
I do, they're not there anymore.
No, they're not, no.
Yeah, so that's how it all started.
So every Thursday, you'd go into the GPO with a fiver. That's a lot of money.
Yeah,
fiver.
Days it was,
So,
£5 worth of 10 pence. I used to get it off the wages clerk. And I used to say, "Just give me £5 and 10 pence."
But at this stage, Elizabeth, how long had you, spent with Alec?
Just one night. Just one night. Just up dancing and just talked the whole night. He was really a nice fella.
Okay, so we're now in the GPO. You're spending all your wages every Thursday night talking to him. You can't go on like this, Alex. What happened next?
Yeah, well, what happened was We were 19 when we met, and then I was 20 in the September, and all the girls that I worked with, we had a party in the Harp. Do you remember the Harp?
Oh, we do, yeah. There,
yeah,
at
well, we had
Bridge,
a party
yeah.
in there, and they got me a cake, and on top of the cake, there was like a little box.
Mm-hmm.
And when I opened the box, it was a ticket to come over to Glasgow to see Alec.
Ah.
And I was like, I was like, oh my God, I can't go over. I've nowhere to stay. And I only met him one night. And what happens if I don't like him? Yeah. And they were all, oh, just go. So I phoned him that night and I told him what the girls had done. And he said, just come over and we'll see how it goes. And then the rest is history. We used to just come backwards and forwards. But then days there was no Mr. Ryanair. It was like Aer Lingus, and the flights were really expensive.
Yeah.
And then I used to go by the train and the ferry. And then after, I think it was 4 years,
four
I had been
years.
Waiting for a transfer at Marks Spencer's. And I just asked them, I said, look at what's happening. And they said they weren't really prepared to let me go because it was like a holiday romance and that if it didn't work out and they were, you know, sending me. So I just handed my notice in that day and I came over to on the Friday and I got a job. It was a bank holiday here on the Monday and I got a job on the Tuesday in House Fraser's.
Okay. And how long were you commuting? And
I met him in 1981 and I came over to live in Glasgow in 1984.
Wow.
So you're back married in 86.
So you're back and forward for nearly 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my spending money went, Joe.
And did you ever doubt that you were going to end up together?
After a while, you know, when you're going backwards and forwards and
it's tiring and
yeah, and like you're saying to yourself, oh God, what's going to happen? Yeah. Because at that time, I never even thought about leaving home, to be honest with you. And it was my mother. My mother said to me, look, you're just going to have to sit and think what you want to do. And she said, he's a nice boy. And she really loved him. She thought he was really nice. And I said, well, what do you think I should do? And she said, just go and see how you get on. So that was it. I just left. And
well done.
I'm still here.
And how was he?
How was he? Yeah, he's grand. He's gone golfing. Otherwise, I would have let you talk to him.
And thank God you held on to your Dublin accent.
Everybody says that to me.
No, your Dublin accent is gone, Elizabeth.
Do you think it is? I can't have that, Joe. I have to go back home. I haven't been home for a year now because of COVID. So
I have to go back and get practice back in, you know? It's coming back to you now, the accent. And what's the accent you had? No, I hear a good touch of Scottish. But what do you tell us about your life then in Glasgow, family, jobs, relations?
As I said to you, when I came over, I went to the job centre and I had two interviews. One was for Arnott's in Argyle Street in Glasgow and I got that job. I was there for 5 years and then I had my first daughter. I got married in 1986 and had my first daughter in 1988. And then my mother died, unfortunately, so I had to come back and, you know, had a new baby, so I wasn't working then. And then I had my second daughter, and I went back to work when my first daughter went to school, and I started working at Marks and Spencer's over here. And then I was had another daughter, and I started a new job in an office. And now my last job, as I say, this is the last job I'm going to have until I retire. So I'm a community champion in Tesco in Glasgow.
Okay, brilliant. And you've meant three children?
Three girls, yeah.
Okay.
And
have they been to Dublin?
Oh, they've God, yeah. We used to, like when they were kids, I used to be home three or four times. They love Dublin.
Yeah.
They love it.
Just don't let them go to Ibiza. Never know who they might.
Yeah.
Ibiza. Never know who they might.
Well, Ibiza is not like
fantastic.
When I was there. It's not like what it was. It was a lot quieter than what it is now.
And were you listening to Eileen on Friday, Elizabeth?
I always listen to you, Joe, on my day off on Thursday.
You're definitely Dublin, so you're
I've listened to you when you used to work with Gay Bourne when you used to do
God rest him,
Lord rest his soul.
So Eileen, obviously we're still we're still looking for the driver and the drover and the dealer. And apparently Reese Witherspoon wants to wants to option the film rights.
I'd write a book, because see the stories I could tell you from going backwards and forwards, missing fairies and so much, you know.
And did any of your friends, Elizabeth, who were with you on that holiday 40 years ago, did any of you say, no, leave it? Like, one of them said you couldn't understand the word he was saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you see, when I came over here, they couldn't understand me.
Okay.
I could understand them, no problem. I had lost touch with all the girls that I worked with in Marks and Mary Street, and then Facebook's a great thing. I seen an advertisement for Marks and Spencer's, and I messaged them and said I was going to be 50, and was there any chance that any of the girls were still there that I worked with in 1978, and one of my great friends there, she seen the note and she messaged me. So I've ended up reunited with them all. That I used to work with them. We used to have some great laughs, you know what I mean? And after not seeing them for 25 years, when I was home a few years ago, we all met up.
What was written on the postcard again?
To cut a long story short, I lost my mind.
Spandau Ballet.
That's it.
Have you still got the postcard?
I have.
Oh, you have to send
it. And I've got hundreds of letters that we used to write to each other.
Elizabeth, you have to send me a photograph of that postcard, please.
I will indeed.
If Ali could agree, then we'll put it up.
I know, he won't believe me when I tell him this.
Well, we play with Spandau. Here's Spandau Ballet for the two of you. Long are you married now?
Pardon me?
How long are you married, Elizabeth?
We're married 35 years in March, in
well
April.
Done. Well
yeah,
done.
40
well
years
done.
Together.
To cut a long story short, Elizabeth, he lost his mind. Both of you fell on your feet anyway.
I did. I'm a very lucky lady, yeah.
And he's a lucky man as well.
Yeah, we're very bad. We have our ups and downs, Joe, like everybody else. But
and your three daughters, how are they doing?
Three daughters went through uni. My last one's on our last year through uni. Two live in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And one lives here in Glasgow. So they're all doing great, thank God.
Okay, well done. And do you still keep in touch with the women who were on the trip with you 40 years ago? Do you still know them?
Yeah, still keep in touch with them all, yeah.
Isn't that fantastic?
So great friends.
Okay. Elizabeth Robertson, if you want to, think about it, send us a photograph of that postcard, given that you remember every single word from 40 years ago, and it did reunite you, and it will keep us alive in the search for the driver, the drover, and the cattle dealer.
I hope she finds them.
Yeah, well, my nerves are gone anyway. I don't know about you.
So is mine talking to you, Joe.
Okay, they shouldn't be. Elizabeth, you're lovely to talk to you. Lovely, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, thanks, Joe. Same to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Probably the most famous fishing tackle shop in Ireland is Rory's. It's in Temple Bar in Dublin, isn't it, Mary Harkin? Mary, good afternoon.
Hi, how you doing, John?
Are you open or closed?
No, unfortunately, we're closed. The government consider us a non-essential business, so we're only allowed to do online and telephone sales to post out. And just agreeing with the other caller that you had earlier, just to, you know, it's not a level playing field. You know, it's not fair that large supermarkets were able to put specials on there last week and sell fishing tackle in the middle of their aisles, and people could go down
did they?
And buy the fishing rod.
Hang on, who put on?
Lidl's, and yes, you know, a customer, you know, under, you know, with strict COVID measures in place, my shop can't come in and buy a fishing rod or a tackle box or anything. And it's just not fair. You know, we all have to pay. We're all trying to, you know, just a case of survival. And it's the same with myself, other fishing tackle shops and sport shops that we can't stay open.
And Mary, do you know if Lidl have they done specials before? You know, the Thursday specials or whatever.
They have indeed, yes. And, you know, and I don't have a problem if people want to do the specials, but it's not fair when other shops like ourselves are not allowed open to the public, but yet they can sell what we're not allowed to sell to the public. and yet they can sell it to the public. It just doesn't make sense. And all we're asking is that the government, it's a level playing field. You're either open or you're not open. But why should, there shouldn't be one rule for one and one for the other. And that's what's very unfair. You know, and it's just, you know, it's just crazy. You know, as I said, you know,
ragworm, a rag, you know, the bait that you buy.
Yes. Yeah.
Where can you buy bait at the minute?
Well, we're not selling it at the moment because we're just not able to, because, you know, some of the worms we got in recently for Patrick's Day, and if somebody wants to come and we can sell it, we can put them in the post. But in terms of other live bait, it just wouldn't survive in the post or whatever. It's not worth your while doing it.
Can you put worms in the post?
Well, you could, yeah. Some of the ones, the garden worms, would survive in the post for a day
or
two.
What do you pack them in?
Well, they come in pre-packed in pots, and then it's just a matter of wrapping them, you know, in a way that they'll still get air in the box and they should be okay to go. But apart from that, you know, it's just hard, you know. It's soul destroying because, you know, we still have the same overheads, and yet, okay, well, we're still online, we're still making some money, but it just doesn't seem, it seems fair that, as I said, as another shop.
Yeah.
And you see they're selling other sites of equipment as well, you know, and while us small shops have to remain closed, it's just not right.
Okay, how long are you closed now, Mary?
Well, we've been closed since the 1st of December, sorry, 1st of January, apologies. And, you know, and God knows when we're going to get open again. Obviously, even if they had click and collect, it might help to some degree.
Yeah. How long have you been on the go?
We're here 61 years now. It's in February. Yeah, so we're going a long time. I want to keep it going for another 61, if at all possible. Not that I will see the next 61 years.
So February would have marked your 64th anniversary.
Yes, yes, yes.
But is that the first February you've been closed in 61 years?
It has, yes, unfortunately.
Doesn't it say it all about this pandemic?
Yeah. But you know, all you have to do is keep on trying, and like all those other, you know, shoe shops and whatever that can sell, you know, we keep on going, you're doing your best, you're doing online or whatever, and you just hope that people remember to buy Irish, you know, that's the most important thing as well, support your local shop, because, you know, without your local shop, you don't have towns or villages.
Yeah, then you wonder, should the big supermarkets, as they're doing very well, all of them, as you know.
Yeah.
Should they hold off on selling products that are non-essential that other specialist can't sell?
Well, I think so. You go into other shops, and the certain shops I've seen in my locality, and they've had certain parts of the shop cordoned off because they're not allowed to sell it.
Yeah.
And I just don't see why they should be allowed to sell it. Either everybody sells it or don't sell it at all, one or the other, but it's just unfair.
Okay, well put. Thanks, Anita. That's Mary Harkin
of Rory's.
Thank you very
much. Have a good afternoon.
You too. Of Rory's Fish and Tackle Shop here in Dublin. Back tomorrow, 1:45, Shannon Gorman, producer. Ray Darcy's next.